American Carbon Alliance. Tell me, first of all, what brought you out of retirement to come in and take over leadership of this this organization?
What brought me out was the concern about what's happening out here in rural America with the opportunities. And there was a lot of debate about capturing carbon, and there wasn't a lot of discussion about the positive aspects of capturing carbon and what that means for farmers. You know, when the ethanol industry came along 20 years, really strong 20 years ago, it created a new demand, a new domestic demand for corn, which had been in oversupply. And, you know, we've seen over the last 20 years farm income double because of it. And now we're at a kind of a crossroads where demand's not growing as fast as the yields are increasing. And as we move forward, you know, ethanol has an opportunity as a higher blend, but that's been slow. We still hope to get that out there to create new demand. But the real demand driver out there is going to be what future fuels look like. And sustainable aviation fuel is one in particular. That's about a 100 billion gallon market. And but farmers won't really be able to take advantage of that unless we are able to capture carbon, sequester it, and lower our carbon index, which is basically the score governments, both here at home and around the world, give us for the use of biofuels. And how much carbon does it emit? And capturing carbon at the ethanol plants, which is really easy done, because that's the only thing that goes up the smokestack for all practical purposes, is some moisture. You capture it, you compress it, you put it in a pipeline and ship it to areas of the country that can successfully store it below the ground to cap it, and it's gone out of the atmosphere. Well, they give credits for those. And if ethanol gets those credits, we qualify for this potentially 100 billion gallon market called sustainable aviation fuels, which the aviation industry, as you probably know, are probably more in the crosshairs of having to do something to lower their carbon intensity than any other industry out there. And that's an opportunity for us. And I didn't want to see rural America miss that opportunity. I still got the farm boy in me. And once you have that, you always want to see farmers succeed. And to succeed, they want to profit from the marketplace. And so they talked me out of retirement.
Now,
long answer, so I'm sorry. But,
No. I appreciate the insight. Obviously, farmers independent by nature. Private property rights gets to be a standard for ag groups. How do you get past that concern that seems to be out there in farm country?
Well, there's a lot of concern about those issues, you know, and I think sometimes things get overemphasized. And while there's a lot of people talking about those things and a lot of debate going back and forth on how to do it and how they interact with the companies and what they end up getting paid and all that stuff, we're not into that here. American Carbon Alliance, we're just talking about the benefits. And the benefits, again, are very economic. You're going to see net farm income go up. You're going to see ethanol industry expand. And you're going to see rural America's kind of interstate to the future of fuels in this country. And I often do equate that with the interstate. But I understand every farmer needs to negotiate with the companies. But my understanding is all these companies that are proposing to build pipelines are basically guaranteeing that farmers won't, their land will be restored to the original yield potential that it has. So I don't know what everybody's concerned. Some people are just don't want to see anything. And you know, Don, change is always scary. something new out there scares people until they understand all the both sides of the argument, all sides of the argument, and how this can benefit it.
So, who's the message that you're trying to get to as far as talking about some of the benefits and advantages of some of this work that we're doing here, Tom?
The people that are affected, and that'd be the farmers, the rural communities, the leaders in the rural areas. Don, I often equate this to when we started Growth Energy in the beginning. There was this incredibly non-factual argument out there called food versus fuel, which didn't make sense, but it kind of became an obstacle. It did become an obstacle. Very big obstacle to the ethanol industry and moving forward, even though it wasn't grounded in facts, it made a catchy argument. And you don't want this to happen, too, because we don't want to get left behind in the economic opportunities of producing fuel right here in rural America that's cleaner. It's better for the environment. It's better for the community. And so that the message we're trying to portray, Don, is directly to the people that are involved. We're not going to convince the folks that only want to see EVs come hell or high water. Those folks out there, they want to eliminate the internal combustion engine. Even though, and a lot of very smart people can tell you this, we can make the internal combustion engine cleaner than in an electric vehicle. And that should be the goal in America. Whoever can do it the best and most efficient. And rural America, again, is a partner in this.
I like the analogy of food versus fuel. Is it some of the same critics that we had during that time period, Tom, that are the hurdle in this go-round?
Well, I think that you know how it works. If you're against an industry, and there were a lot of people that just flat out was against us producing renewable fuels that pile on. And, you know, it brings out all the critics. And the interesting thing, Don, and the analogy I use on the current debate ongoing in about five or six states where, you know, they're taking the carbon, they're capturing it, and they're shipping it through pipelines. Well, that's kind of the first player at bat. And I think some of these critics that don't want to see rural America play a part and don't want to see renewable fuels play a part and don't want to see the internal combustion engine be a part of it, I think they realize that as well. And if they can get that first batter out, it gives them an advantage going forward. And that first at bat is basically... your area there, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, those states. And so the critics think we stop them there, it makes it a bigger hurdle going forward. And I think that's the goal of a lot of people on it.
Is there any timeline on all this, Tom? I guess I'm not aware of where they're all sitting as far as wanting to move forward on these projects.
Well, the pipeline, capturing the carbon and shipping it, pipelines, that's all controlled by the states, different timelines for the permitting process.
Yeah.
And the companies have to go through each of those. But it's not, Don, the future's not just about shipping it in pipelines. There's also, we have a number of ethanol plants in this country that are located in the areas where the geological formation allows them to just capture that carbon and pump it directly into the ground, and including already in North Dakota, and you've got plants in Illinois that do that, and you've got plants in Colorado that want to do it, and others. And so it's all a value, but if people stop carbon capture and sequestration, then those opportunities won't exist for anyone who comes forward in the future.
No doubt. Anything I'm missing here we should be focused on, Tom?
No, it pretty well covers the gambit. I mean, there's a lot of challenges out there, getting the federal government to recognize what's called the GREET model, which is a federal Department of Energy modeling system on how you count all the carbon emissions and how you count land use and all that stuff. That's an important decision coming up by the Treasury Department as they move forward on the sustainable aviation fuels and the lofty goals they have on that. That would make ethanol, that in combination with the carbon capture, probably premier feedstock for those aviation fuels.
That's exciting.
And, one thing I will say, Don, I also compare this, and some people say, well, this just helps corn. What about the other farmers? Well, you witnessed that in the past when ethanol came along. It raised the price of corn, and corn being the largest crop, it brought everything else up with it. I often use the analogy, a rising tide lifts all boats, and a sinking ship brings them all down together. And so suddenly, if you have oversupply of whatever commodity, in this case corn, that's going to have a spillover effect on other commodities as farmers seek other options than planting corn. Then you got oversupply in that commodity. It's just a continuous funneling downward, and we don't want to see that happen. The happiest farmers I've ever met are certainly the ones that are making a profit from the marketplace, and that's what they want to do.